okay, let's do a podcast. Welcome to the Snark Squad Pod. Woo! That's what we're calling it, right?
Yes.
Snark Squad Pod? Okay. Mari, what is the Snark Squad Pod?
That's a great question, Nicole. I feel like that's a question that we will be answering over these next few weeks.
You should start with who we are.
Yeah, introductions.
Hey, who are you?
Hi, I'm Marines. I am one half of the Snark Squad co-captains, I guess. And that's about it, right?
Yeah, that's about it. Thank you for still including me as a co-captain. I'm an absentee.
Yeah.
I'm the absentee parent.
I feel like once you've made a child, though, you're that child's, like, you know.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I'm Stark Squad's deadbeat mom.
Introduce yourself.
My name's Nicole Sweeney. And yeah, I make stuff all over the internet. Snarksquad.com is one of the things that we have made together. And it is a website where we consume all kinds of media and we recap it with all sorts of wonderful, smart, witty friends of ours. And we're best friends who really like to talk about media, and we're fucking millennials, so of course we're making a podcast.
I think, just part of Snark Squad has always been, like, this evolution of, like, what can we talk about next and how?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it started books and then went to TV, and then, you know, we did videos for a little while, and we still do our own videos, and now we're like, yeah, why not? Let's do a podcast.
Part of it, too, as we tried to cover more and more things, one of the things that we kept running into is it just the nature, the format of the recaps that Snark Squad does, like taking a thing and, you know, writing a 3,000 word post on every episode of a TV show or every chapter of a book or whatever, is very limiting in terms of how much you can cover, because that shit takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
It's like not just consuming all of the media, but like producing the media that goes along with it. It's just very, very time consuming in that format, which greatly reduces the amount of stuff that you can cover.
And I think it also, we ran into, like, not only did we want to do more things than we were able to do, but, like, we can't be as timely as we want. Like, by the time we get around to, like, consuming it, writing it, it's like, oh, yeah, that was, like, from 2 seasons ago. And you're like,
yep.
Damn it.
So yep.
For all of those reasons and probably more, we decided that having a podcast would be a great idea.
To that end, we've been writing the Veronica Mars season 3 recaps for like a year and a half now.
Right.
And like the beginning of that third season is the Hearst rape arc. I feel like before we publish those, all of those episodes, all of the things that we've written are going to need a once over because of the cultural events that have transpired.
I haven't even thought of it.
Uh-huh.
Some of those recaps were written like way pre-election even.
Yeah.
Like, that'll be fun to go back and see like these happier versions of ourselves.
So yeah, there's lots of reasons why it's going to be great for us to start this podcasting thing as a new way to cover more ground
and have a lot of feelings. We have feelings about so many things that we should not be hindered by format.
Yes, this is a new frontier for feelings.
On that note, what are we having feelings about today, Nicole?
Today, we're going to have feelings about the first season of the CW TV series Riverdale. Actually, before we start talking about that, though, real quick, I do also want to say, just in case you're here and you just like want to learn about the podcast and like you don't give a shit about Riverdale, last housekeeping note, if you want to suggest other things for us to discuss that, you know, maybe you do give a shit about, you can either find us on StarkSquad.com. All of these podcast episodes will have a post on the website for you to, you know, discuss, react, whatever. Or you can find us on Twitter at Snark_Squad and just let us know what you think we should talk about next. Okay, Riverdale.
Riverdale was your idea.
It was my idea.
That we could cover.
Uh-huh.
So why don't you, like, why Riverdale? Why was that a thing where you were like, yep, we're going to watch it, we're going to talk about it?
So Riverdale is very much, like, right up my alley. I watched it on Netflix, so I didn't watch it as it was airing, but I watched it on Netflix, and I was like, yep, this is my jam. I'm very into soapy teenager trash. mostly because I'm very into coming of age stories in general. And so like that is generally teenager stories. This isn't quite that exactly. But yeah, I think this is like, it's like fun to watch while also still having its share of flaws and things like that that are worth discussing. And that's always a thing that we kind of struggle with, like with the recaps, is it has to be enjoyable, but like still have room for us to kind of poke at it a little bit.
Right. And we've definitely come in, like, encountered both extremes of that spectrum where it's like too good and we don't know what to say bad about it anymore. And then where it's like too bad and we're not having fun watching it. And it's almost like too much to snark.
I'm looking at you, Gotham.
Yes. Which we rage quit. So I feel like this is a good balance of having like, you know, as you mentioned, stuff that you're enjoying, but still being like, you know, campy enough that you can sit back and laugh.
Yes.
It's funny too that you mentioned coming of age and then we're like, well, this is not really that, because I wrote down this is a coming of age story.
it is still definitely that. But I don't know that it would be, it's not primarily that, I guess is mostly what I meant.
Yes. So I'm curious, what did you know about the Archie comics before coming into Riverdale?
Basically nothing. I knew that Betty and Veronica were like a thing in like the pop culture. Like I knew that that was a thing. That's it. That is the full spectrum of knowledge that I possessed about the Archie Comics universe. How about you?
I feel like I remember seeing them in like supermarket lines and having read maybe through a few, but having no real knowledge or like retaining any of that. So I don't know if through like pop culture osmosis or whatever, I knew like Betty, Veronica, Archie, and Jughead, but like everything else from the comics, like no idea, no context or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I was going in pretty blind. I watched a couple episodes and I decided to pick up the first comic of like the reboot, because they rebooted it in 2015, I think, just to like have a compare and contrast. But other than that, going into the show, I knew nothing.
Which I think is probably the way to do it, really.
Yeah.
So this show is, I feel like if I were just from, you know, like looking at images of it, my assumption would be something far, far lighter. And my rough understanding is that like the way people describe this is a very dark twist on the comics. So this story, the season one, we're only going to be talking about season one, but the story of season one begins with it begins with some wonderful narration by Jughead.
Yes.
who tells us the story throughout. And the first season story is the story of the death of Jason Blossom, the murder of Jason Blossom. And we meet the sort of the core four of Archie, Jughead, Betty, and Veronica in the first episode. So in the first episode, we learn that Archie spent his summer having an affair with his teacher, which we'll get to in due time. Betty is in love with Archie. And he was finally going to tell him, but he's not interested. And he's right when he says he's never been good enough for Betty, because Betty's way too good for him. And that's
amen.
Archie's not good enough for either one of them. Whatever.
We'll get to that too.
Jughead is brooding in a diner, telling us the story. That's really all we know at the beginning. Jughead. He's got a slower burn. And Veronica is just arriving in the town of Riverdale from New York because her very wealthy father has been arrested for lots of, you know, shady financial dealings. And so now her and her mom is from Riverdale, and the only, you know, property that they had left was her apartment in Riverdale. And so they are starting a new life. And that's where we begin. Does that sum it up?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And Nicole and I haven't talked about this at all, so she's watched it. She watched it before I did. I watched it for the purposes of like doing this whole thing, and we have not talked about this at all. And I will say that after watching that pilot, I watched it with a friend, and I'd like turned to her and I was like, meh, This friend was a fan, obviously, because I was like, want to watch Riverdale? And she's like, oh my gosh, yeah. So, but after that pilot and like that introduction of what you just laid out, like I wasn't really sold. But then I turned to her, I was like, okay, let's play another one. And I think we watched like four that night. So you really at the beginning of that, you get everybody's introduction, and a lot of it is very tropey.
Yes.
But it, I don't know, it builds from that moment. So when you get these introductions and you do have Jughead like brooding in a diner and Veronica like sassing into town and the best friend in love with the guy who's and the love is unrequited, and they make jokes about how he got hot over the summer, like all that stuff is really interesting to me because they almost commit so fully to some of these tropes and like build off of there. So you don't feel like it's so tropey as everything goes on, but in episode one, like they committed.
I like that too, though, because of the fact that it is built on this existing property that like a lot of people know a great deal about, and sort of saying, okay, so here are the like the cutouts that you maybe know something about, and like meet your collection of cardboard cutouts, and then we're gonna spend the season like deconstructing them a little
deconstructing,
bit.
right?
Yeah,
And I
which I
feel like
love.
when it comes to talking about like not knowing anything about Archie and then going into this series, I think really you don't need any kind of background information. I
No.
think what these characters prove to be are just like an entry point into the story, and so you really need none of that background knowledge. And all it is really like an introduction. Like here are some characters you kind of already know, and then go from there.
Yes. So I really want to start with the point at which Mari almost rage quit, as I found on Twitter. Fucking Miss Grundy.
And not only Miss Grundy, but Miss Grundy because she's a teacher who we find out right from the beginning is in a relationship with Archie. So it's like the student-teacher relationship. Oh my God.
We have a lot of feelings about that. You can read all of our Pretty Little Liars recaps. The endless, endless rage over Ezra Fitz. Like I genuinely enjoy the like hot mess that is Pretty Little Liars, but like every episode that was my like constant war with that show. Like I will forgive it everything else that is trash about it, but making Ezra fucking Fitz an endgame like romantic plot is just how dare you? How dare you? I invested so many hours of my life into that garbage fucking show. Kept coming back, and yet for
You
all of
couldn't
that,
escape him, yeah.
I just I need to cut myself off because I will go off on a like 20-minute rant about Ezra Fitz, but this show, this show.
As like a like an opposite to that though, like I feel like as much as I was raging on Twitter at that point, which was like episode four, I think I reached like full rage moment, like my full rage reached the moment where they cut it off. So it really was a show building you to that point where they took you right to the point where you're like, I hate this, and then they end it.
They ended
So
it,
that was pretty well done. And I have to say that as much as I hated the relationship, I don't feel like the show ever portrayed it as something positive like they did with like Ezra and
It's definitely not like Ezra levels of bad, and they clearly like they ended it. The other adults clearly recognized that this was a serious problem. And like even Miss Grundy routinely recognizes that this is bad and shouldn't be happening. It's definitely better. But it bothers me a little bit that like for over the course of the entire season, like that Archie forever views this as a great tragedy. Like they never grapple with the fact that something was
Bad.
done to Archie, right? Like, I don't know, that piece of it bothers me.
So at that yes, I agree. But I think that fits more into, well, not to take away the importance, but I feel like that fits more into Archie being kind of an idiot
Sure.
And not to like blame him for whatnot, but also this
but
idea.
But Archie's an idiot.
Yeah, right.
Archie's a fucking idiot.
He's kind of an idiot. And then also a lot of the things in the show are dealt that way, in mm-hmm. which like they throw these things out there, and then I feel like they're never addressed again. And Miss Grundy is definitely one of those things.
That's true. Yes.
And I mean, it's small things like, why was Polly being made to drink milkshakes every day while she was at Thornhill? I'm serious. That's still bothering me. I don't understand. To like, I don't know, bigger things like even like storylines like Archie dates very briefly one of the Pussycats, Val. And I feel like that never has a conclusion. It's just like they, I don't know, it fades out and nobody ever mentions it again, at least in season one.
Yeah.
So
there are definitely a lot of dropped threads. I will say, so we're not talking about season two at all, but my Miss Grundy grievance, there's the pin that I'm gonna put in that is just there's a season two, it continues, and I
okay
hate it.
Okay
it, the relationship doesn't continue, but the way in which it is
it's
dealt
portrayed
with.
Okay
yes
I will not look forward to watching that.
It's quick, there's not a lot, but it's enough that I was like, god fucking damn it, like right. I was happy for you to have just abandoned that thread and never looked back. That is definitely a thing that they do. There's a lot of just like weird, which is interesting. It is an interesting thing to, you have this mystery show, and because it is also, you know, a teenager CW show, they play with that a lot, like the fact that they can lead you down these like weird alleys that don't have to have a payoff,
right?
Because like whatever,
because at the end of the day, and I will say that what got me invested first before I was like sold on everything else really was the mystery at the heart of the show. Like I kept watching. My friend was like, well, after I was like, meh, she was like, well, do you want to keep watching? I was like, well, yes, because now I have to know who killed Jason Blossom.
Uh-huh.
So that's what hooked me first. But at the end of the day, I would say that this show is kind of a murder mystery as an afterthought. Like it is a coming of age story. It is like the teen drama, and then also it has a murder mystery.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's why some of those threads are kind of like, like go away into the sunset and we never talk about them again.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Does not matter. Yeah, that's, yes, that is true. And it's also, yes, you're right about it being probably a coming of age story first and foremost. And I retract my earlier dismissiveness of that. Because like part of that is, it's part of how the mystery is a device through which to tell the coming of age story.
Right.
It's sort of necessary for them to tell the coming of age story that all of the adults are at least vaguely incompetent. And part of the point though is like yes, it is absurd that these teenagers are the ones who are solving all the mysteries and whatever. But like that's, this particular coming of age story is partially about agency and like and you know, realizing their own sort of capacity and whatnot. So yes, it is, it's just plot garbage to have the adults be incompetent to a certain extent, but it's also like actively useful for telling a coming of age story that
I agree.
You have these incompetent adults.
And I think that it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people will describe this as like a dark, you know, twist on an established thing, and you mm-hmm. you really do have all of these like dark twisty undertones, but at the end of it, and it's funny that you mentioned like the promotional material, I feel like the heart of it is not as dark, and because I think that part of their coming of age is them trying to figure out, so like, how to be good people. You have Veronica not wanting to be the mean girl anymore, and you have Betty, who is like the perfect one, trying to like battle inner darkness basically, and you have Archie, who's kind of an idiot, but he's trying to, like, when he has his best moments when he has his best moments, it's because he's doing like the right thing. And I feel like Jughead is in a lot of ways, by being our like narrator, he's kind of like the moral compass of like, you know, sticking to the truth and finding. So at the end of the day, they're all trying to be good people and do good things, which is a great kind of story to tell on the backdrop of a murder. So, because everything is so shady, like I love that every time that anybody is mentioned, like, oh, that person was here, he has a motive. Like, everyone has a motive. Everybody is implicated. And yet, our core four, what they're really trying, what they're in the process of discovering is like their sense of goodness and sense of like right and wrong.
Yeah, that is, I hadn't really thought about it that way until you put it that way, but it makes me love the show so much more. Oh, that's so good. Such a good thought.
There's two things that I don't want to lose track of here. One is like the murder mystery itself and how you thought that all went down, but also the parents.
Yeah, the parents. Okay. Let's start with the parents. I watched the show on Netflix originally. Me and my boyfriend got back from a trip and we were like, okay, let's just like watch a show. And this was, Riverdale was the only thing we could agree on. And so we watched, and it was a similar thing of like, we watched one episode and we ended up watching like four. And then I had to finish it by myself because he wanted to watch it way too slowly.
Okay.
Unacceptable pace. I needed to find out who killed Jason Blossom.
Same.
obviously. But yeah, the parents, I did, before recording, go back and rewatch the first episode, and it gave me just like renewed fuck these parents feelings. At some point in this episode, Betty's parents are discussing, you know, the murder like on the bank of the river, and Betty's mom is like, if he really is dead, I hope he suffered in his final, you know, moments, whatever, like fuck him. And I just, knowing the whole story at the end of it, like, what kind of sick fucking individual says that about a teenager? Like, what the fuck? Like, the sort of reveal about why they hate him, like, I get it. I, to a certain, you know, like, it's petty and small, but, like, I get them not liking him, but that is a level that I cannot wrap my head around.
So a lot of the times when I, like, I don't even care that this show goes, like, balls to the wall with some of this stuff, like, the murders and the kids are investigating, and it's unbelievable, but I kind of love that aspect of it, that it really fully commits. But most of the moments that I'm like, question mark, like, is this really happening right now, involves the parents and moments like that, and just like the weirdness of like the Blossom family, like pretty much anything that ever happened at Thornhill, like I don't know, that outer level of how these parents are treating the children, or how like the mayor and the sheriff are handling everything, like that almost is more upsetting to me than the, like, you know, the disbelief over kids investigating a murder.
Kids investigating the murder, whatever, it's fine. But the degree to which the parents are shuffled around, as plot service, that was definitely very exasperating. It was just like, I can't, like, you can't wrap your head around it, around like what to make of these parents, especially going back to the mystery. You know, it is very difficult to contextualize any of the, like, the pieces in the mystery when none of the parents are actually, like, clearly defined characters. Like, they are whatever the episode needs them to be that week.
Absolutely. Basically. And I feel like I was just thinking about Veronica's mom, Hermione, and Betty's mom, Aunt Alice. And how at the very beginning, I really hated Alice. And towards the end of the season, I had more sympathy for her. At the beginning, I thought Hermione was like a good mom. And then by the end, I was like, what the hell? By the time that she basically insinuates that Veronica should sleep with Archie to have some kind of control over Archie's dad's decision about his business, I was like, girl, what are you doing right now? And so I almost was thinking, well, they flip-flop, but really what's happening is what you're describing is that whatever the episode needed, or if there was a, the murder needed a suspect, that's how the parents acted.
So this week, a parent is going to do something shady because we need to do a new, to add a new, like, twist to the mystery.
And then, it's so all over the place because you have Archie's dad, who's I'm forgetting all the parents' names right now. But
Luke Perry.
Luke Perry. You have Archie's dad, Luke Perry. And he's like a consistent good dad. Like,
yeah.
I feel like
he's an
probably,
idiot, but
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like Mama Marin. He's the Ashley Marin of
yes.
this
yes.
show.
Yes.
Good heart, tries real hard, real dumb.
Real dumb. But I mean, and that makes sense because look at his offspring. Yeah, yeah right.
Yeah. It's not Archie's fault, I guess, is really the takeaway here is that Archie had no hope.
None at all. I even forgot what we were talking about because we started talking about Luke Perry. When I realized it was Luke Perry, it was like a whole moment.
The casting choices, so many great, great little casting. The former teen dream parents in here. Skeet Ulrich, I had a like weird phase when I was like 10 where I was super into Scream. Don't ask me why. I hate
okay.
horror movies now, but 10-year-old Nicole, I think it was like I thought I was cool because I liked just, you know, like watching a scary movie. Probably, maybe. But Skeet Ulrich is like one of my early celebrity crushes. So Jughead's dad.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, hey, good.
Which is another one who's like swinging back and forth from like bad to good. And towards the end, then they play up the whole like he's loyal to his people kind of thing. So,
but he's like clearly out of the picture for Jughead, who's Jughead's living like above in the projection room of a drive-in movie theater,
right?
So clearly his dad sucks,
right?
But by the end we're meant to feel some considerable sympathy for him, and it's
he gets implicated in the murder, mm-hmm. and then you find out that no, he didn't like murder the kid, but he did like hide the body and like destroy other evidence. And I liked that the show was still like, okay, you're not the murderer, but you still did really bad things, and
you still have to be in jail,
right?
You don't get to be a free man now.
Right? And he says it too. He says, you know, I'm not all bad, you know, and I haven't been all good, and I have to answer for the things that I've done. So mm-hmm. I feel like it hits these notes where you're like, yes. And then the next moment you have like, the Blossom mom, Cheryl's mom, telling her mm-hmm. that she has to go to school, even though they just found out like who her brother's murderer is. And like, she's so awful to Cheryl. Like, so it was just all over the place with the parents.
Cheryl as well. Cheryl is also a character. Cheryl's whole character is being extra.
Yes. she never had a subtle moment.
She does not do subtlety, but also similarly kind of shuffled around as the plot demands. In the second season, she's become a bigger player, so she's gotten to have more a little bit, but yeah, she is another, much like the parents, it's just like, we would like you to go do something absurd now. Here's go for it.
Here's a candelabra. And go.
Yes.
So as we're talking about characters, I wrote down some things that I wanted to hear from you about. So
okay.
I'm curious now, who are your favorite characters? Because we've talked about the parents being useless and Archie being the worst.
Yeah.
So who are your favorites?
Betty is my number one. I just love her so much. I love her. She's so smart and good, and she solves everything. She's better than everyone. Veronica is my second favorite. Veronica is also quite great as their friend. I like their friendship. I think I mostly like Veronica for her proximity to Betty.
To Betty.
who is above and beyond my chosen one.
Yeah.
Cheryl's fun. Her extraness is an enjoyable like presence. Like, I like that she's there. Like, I think she provides a little bit of what I think Mona occasionally brought to at least later Pretty Little Liars, but like better. Like, she's just like kind of absurdist and fun, and like in the way that, like you were saying, that like this show just sort of commits very aggressively to all of the choices that it makes.
Right.
I like the fact that they commit so aggressively to Cheryl's extra-ness and to Jughead's emo-ness. Basically, all of the teenagers except for Archie are great, but Betty is above and beyond the best one.
So I have this thing where I hate when any character, but it's usually a male character, tells a female like, "No, you like you're too good for me," or like other or
Oh.
otherwise like self-selects out of the relationship that way, like I'm protecting you, like blah blah. Because I feel like it takes away agency. Like if I don't care, like if I want to be with a shitty person, that's my choice. Like you don't get to
Right.
decide that for me. So
Yes.
that was
Yes.
my scene.
You can decide that you don't want to be with me, but
Right.
you don't get to tell me who is good enough for me. I
Right.
make that call.
Yes. So I hate that. So, and I hated that moment between
Yes.
Archie and Betty until like 3 or 4 episodes later, where I was like, shit, she is too good for you. Never gonna happen, buddy. I fell hardcore in love with Betty. I think she's such a great character. And I, you know, she could have fallen into this like trope of being like the girl next door, but I don't know what it is about like her wide-eyed commitment to like truth and justice that just it, I think is the
Love it
heart
so
of the
much.
story. Yep.
Yes. I
Where
just love it. Why not? Yes, her wide-eyed commitment to truth and justice. That is that's it. That's I love it. I'm here for it.
Everybody else to me is like tied for second, except for Archie, who's third. So those are my rankings. Like, I don't really care much about anybody else besides Betty.
Besides Betty, who's clearly the best one. Yeah, so we're in agreement. We have a consensus on Betty's superiority. Yeah, Betty's the best one. Don't at me. That's it. Okay, we've been pretty gushing. What are some of the things that you really just did not like? Like, what did you hate most about this experience?
You know, there wasn't a lot, to be honest. There wasn't a ton. I feel like overall, as much as we can pick on like the smaller things. So, I mean, a big thing we already talked about, which was I think the whole Miss Grundy thing was a misstep. I think I read somewhere, which I, you know, don't at me again if this is not true, but I read somewhere that they kind of stopped that whole relationship thing abruptly because it wasn't doing well with test audiences.
Thank you,
So,
test audiences.
right. And I feel like that whole beginning was a like a misstep because they wrote it, but then a misstep of how they didn't really address it. I think part of the reason that Archie wasn't like, I mean, he doesn't like Veronica, that's fine, but I think that, you know, part of it was because he was so into Miss Grundy, and then they just kind of move on from that, and Archie starts dating around, but they never address that. I don't know. So that was like one of my main sticking points where I was just like, okay, that this show got that part wrong.
That is my single biggest grievance, like period, with the show for sure.
Otherwise, I really enjoyed myself and I watched it very quickly. We talked about like a lot of the stuff surrounding the murder mystery itself, I feel like falls into some trappings, and we talked about how it shuffles around the characters, their motivations, and doesn't really stick to the character like how you think they would act in service of the mystery itself and to make people seem suspicious or shady or
Yes,
whatnot. So
yes, yes.
there's a lot of things like that, but like big glaring things where I can be like, this sucked. There, I don't know. I don't think that I have one.
Yeah. Oh man. Wow. That surprises me. Well, you know, I feel like it's, you know, this our inaugural episode of the Snark Squad Pod is like a good sort of tone setting thing, because I feel like in general, like I am much more accepting of trash. I am much more like willing to be like, yeah, oh yeah, like yeah, I hear you that X, Y, and Z are terrible, but it was fun. And you're like, that's kind of our dynamic. Because of how it was trash. So if you don't have a list, I feel much better about how I don't either. Yeah, the Miss Grundy thing is real. I mean, that did genuinely like upset me. I had sort of a similar, some friends had told me that that was a thing. And they were like, yeah, but it's resolved well, quickly and well is what they said. And I was like, first of all, it took like 4 episodes in a 13 episode season. So I was like, I don't know if that, or 4 or 5, that's not quick. first of all. And second of all, it was not dealt with fucking well.
No.
But
it was dealt with swiftly,
yeah.
but which is a sort of like, okay, you know, satisfaction, but it wasn't done well.
So that's, we didn't really hate much of anything here.
I feel like, you know, if we were recapping this episode by episode, it would be different because I feel like I would have a lot more little things to nitpick each episode. But because we're talking about it like high level season one, like glaring things that I could say right now, these were the worst. I can't think of any. But sitting there watching each episode, I could have been like, oh yeah, that's stupid. Ha that, you know, so.
Yeah, sure. Yes. And that is also partially the nature of recapping, of course.
Yes.
You and I have discussed at great length, but like there's being explicit about now that there is just, that is a very, very different thing. Like watching a show and like breaking it down scene by scene, then this happened, then this happened, and this happened. You become much more, so this is something else. This is another like a smaller nitpick, but like, I don't know. A thing that I noticed kind of throughout the first season, and again, like confirmed rewatching the pilot, the Blossom twins are supposed to be 17. Our core four is, we are informed, are sophomores. Cheryl should be older than the rest of them.
Right.
And is clearly like retconned into not being that. Come like the second season, she's clearly the same. I don't know, whatever. But that was a thing that like bothered me throughout too. Like, especially Cheryl's cattiness with Betty. I was always like, you're like a senior talking to a sophomore, like what the fuck are you doing? Like,
right.
Why?
Oh, right, because she should have been the same age as Polly and Jason, and Polly was 18 at the time that all of this was happening. Oh, well, I didn't even think to be annoyed about that. So thank you.
That annoyed me, and then because then I just rewatched it too, and like near the end, when like Jughead and Archie have their little moment at the diner, like Archie drives home, he's like 17. You know, he was 17. What was he doing with his life? And whatever.
Yeah.
That's a stupid. Whatever. But, and so, like, that kind of stuff, when you are recapping a show, like, comes up very, very aggressively in a way that is different when you're, like, binge watching a series. Yeah. It's a different consumption experience.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, what did you love? What was your, like, favorite thing?
You know, I gotta say that at the end of the day, I said that this is what hooked me, and I think it's what brought me along through the whole series, and I think it was the murder mystery for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was necessarily an amazing mystery, but I liked the way that you had the characters all dealing with their own personal issues. They would come together and deal with their friend issues, and in the back of everything else, they're like, "Oh yeah, like someone got murdered." So I feel like. I feel like that elevated this into like, it reminded me a lot of like Veronica Mars, because she did a lot of the same thing. Like she had her, you know, her school drama, she had her like mystery of the week, and then she had the whole Lily Kane murder. So I feel like when you have a show that exists on those multiple platforms, I don't know, I thought it kept it interesting.
Yeah, the sort of multi-tiered storytelling.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. My favorite thing is Betty Cooper. I just really love Betty Cooper.
Oh, well, duh. Well, Betty is the one who's, like, basically bringing along the whole mystery. And like.
That's true. Our answers are the same, essentially. Yeah.
What did you think of, like, the whole murder mystery and how it was solved?
I loved the way they told that story. Like, I was gripped to the mystery, like, the whole time. I was constantly, like, oh shit, like with each, you know, each new twist was exciting, and like, yeah, yes, a lot of it is sort of kind of absurd, unbelievable storytelling, but like it was very fun and engaging storytelling.
I agree.
So I had a blast with that murder mystery.
I was thinking about this in terms of being like a Veronica Mars thing. And one thing that really stuck out to me was that with Veronica, we got all those flashbacks to Lily.
Mm-hmm.
And Lily, it was a character, you know, we got to know her, and we really understood Veronica's motivation for trying to solve this. That was her best friend. And, you know, she had like a personal connection to that whole thing. We don't know who the hell Jason Blossom is.
Nope.
We have no idea. And I don't know if that, like, we learn more about him in season two or if they have any plans, but we get stories as to what happened to him and what, you know, what led him to being murdered. But we don't know if any of them are true. We don't know what kind of person he was. He never says a line, I think, in the whole thing. We never hear him talk. We don't know what he sounds like. We have no idea who
this
person is. He
does in the very beginning, the flashback to when he and Cheryl are
in the boat.
In the boat, when she
Yes.
asks if he's afraid and he says no.
And I think that's pretty
That's
much the
probably
only
his, that's
time,
it.
yeah, that so I don't know. It added some like darkness to the story. And it I okay, so to compare it to something else. So like Pretty Little Liars, right? It's trash. And part of the reason that it got so much worse as it continued is that it should have been resolved and it never was. And it just kept like compounding. It was like, who's A? And then it was like, oh, A and the A team and A D, and I don't even know what, you know, like it kept like compounding. So I feel like that we got an answer to one mystery at the end of season one, but they opened it up to like this larger also thing happening in the town. So I appreciated that. Like, I don't know. I think it just, for as much as it wasn't a great or a perfect murder story, I liked what it did as part of the larger like construction of the episodes.
Yeah, they flowed very well, and they I think it also it benefited from being like a half a 13 episode season. Like that was a very that was like the correct amount of time to tell the story. Nothing felt like filler, which was good. Yeah, it was just, it was a very well structured story. Okay, so that's Riverdale. We had sort of talked about we've kind of talked about this a lot throughout, but one of the things that we talked about before recording was kind of doing like a you know tying this back to other things that we've recapped on Snark Squad as like maybe a way that we wrap this up. Does that make sense?
Yep, let's do
Okay. Question mark? Let us know on Twitter or
You
snarkspot.com if
can
this is a
at
good
me
idea.
about this.
Please, please do.
So, I mean, we mentioned some stuff throughout, and I think part of this whole appeal of this the story is that it makes a lot of references itself. I think it's super aware of the genre it's in. I think the characters make references all throughout it. So I think it is very much tied, like it's very self-aware. But it reminded me a lot in the beginning of Dawson's Creek, especially because it had the Dawson Joey Jen like moving into town, like slow motion shot, and Pacey would be Jughead. So it had that like core four where Dawson is the worst, also, just like Archie. Like he's supposed to
Only
be the
they,
center, yeah.
and the only they didn't spend, you know, they didn't waste an eternity on Dawson Joey. they buried that quickly, which was good.
And even in season one, they had like Pacey and the teacher, that whole storyline. And
Oh
Pacey
yeah,
is
that's
Jughead.
right.
Or well, Pacey was Jughead, but at least it was like the Archie, you know. So I don't know. It had a lot of those same similarities to me. Small town, that whole idea. The gay best friend, I don't know. It just had a lot of tie-ins.
But like and like but like culturally situated, right? So like that was, you know, that was Dawson's was of its time, and this is very much of this time too. That's true. Yes, I had not thought of that. So we also talked about this repeatedly, but obviously Pretty Little Liars is like the first the main thing that came up for me. Like I was describing the show to Phoenix and like that. I was like, it's the new Pretty Little Liars. But like but it's interesting because also like some of what we were just talking about with Dawson's Creek, it's like it has it's it is aware of where it fits. And has adjusted itself accordingly. Like it's learned the lessons of things that came before, you know? And so yeah, it's a lot like Pretty Little Liars, but fixed in many ways that I appreciate. Yeah, like you said, like the mystery is clearly like contained and it's resolved, and they like they had a clear direction, and it and then it's solved.
I was going to say next, Veronica Mars, which we've mentioned, but I think for me, the crossover there are the voiceovers. So that was, as soon as I heard Jughead, I was like, oh, Veronica Mars voiceover. And then also having like what is the name of the gang? The Serpents or whatnot. It reminded me a lot of like the Fitzpatricks and the PCHers, which were like a big part of the Veronica Mars like story. And then also the whole one episode, which was a great episode about the slut shaming and the book. It reminded me a lot of a similar thread, which then got continued in season three of like the rapes on campus and having the like book where they were keeping score and all of that.
Lots of, yes, very similar stories.
Yep.
I think they actually refer, I don't, it might have been in the second season, but somebody actually refers to Betty as, like, you know, it's like, what are you doing, Veronica Mars, kind of thing, too. And I
I
was
think, and they
like,
do
my
like,
heart,
I know,
my
you're like,
heart.
yeah. And I think Veronica Mars has an episode called Betty and Veronica.
Yes, it does. It
Yeah.
does. It's the episode where Veronica goes to the other high school and poses as a student.
Oh, yes.
She poses as a student named Betty.
Yes. I've got one more tie-in.
Okay. Oh, okay.
The OC.
Okay.
And this is specifically for one little thing, and it's the student lounge. And how they're all sitting around in the student lounge in like that big couch.
Yes. That is
Do you
very,
remember?
very
Like they
OC.
had, yeah, they had. I don't know if you've seen it in other places, but I imagine I like tied it immediately to the OC, because we complained about it there too. Like who has like a student lounge and a huge couch in the middle of the high school? But that's like where all the important conversations happened on Riverdale. Like they would be like, "Oh my God, but my dad just got arrested, and you know this about the murder." And you're like, "Why are you on a couch at school?" And I remember yelling that same thing at the OC. So that was my last little.
Which I, to that end, that is also so like the OC is like aggressively and intentionally about a group of very wealthy teenagers, right? Like
Yeah,
that's like that is that's
that
what it's
whole
doing.
thing. Yeah.
And I this is like a very very not really even spoiler, but for season two that they introduce the other high school. I think they mention at the end of the first
Yeah, the
season that
South
our
Side.
that
Yeah.
Jughead, yeah,
Yes.
yes, that Jughead's gonna have to go to Southside High, right? Yeah,
Right.
so like it's I don't know if I feel like this is probably more of an accident that they sort of lucked into, but
Yeah.
like Riverdale High is like the bougie high school in
Yeah.
town.
So they have couch.
So
What you're saying is that I didn't go to a bougie high school, and I don't know about the couches in the student
Oh,
lounge.
I also never went to a bougie high school, but from what I've learned on TV, if you're rich, your public high school has couches. That's what I'm
Got
saying.
it. Okay, well, silly
And
me.
I have no experience to the contrary, so until I've lived opposing evidence, I'm gonna keep believing that all rich kids go to public high schools with I guess the OC High School was not public. That was a private
Oh no,
school.
that one was private, yeah.
Anyway, this is not important. Well, see, now that it's a private high school, you see it all makes sense,
It
right, Mari?
does.
It's perfectly logical that they
Listen,
have.
all I wanted to bring up was the couch, okay? Those other ones that I mentioned were legit. This is just really about
Just
the
about teenagers, high schools with couches.
Yeah.
Good. Well, on that note, I guess we did it. I think we just recorded our first episode of our podcast. Dang.
Yay! Look at us
Well,
go.
look at us go. Please share your thoughts and feelings. Again, you can find us on Twitter at snark_squad or at snarksquad.com. You can find me at Sweeney Says on Twitter.
You can find me at My Name Is Marines on Twitter as well.
And we'll see you next week.